Good morning, counsel. This is the case of State versus Lohman. And we will begin by having members of the court introduce themselves. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice. And then by order of seniority of service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
I am Jeff Funk, good morning.
Morning, Jonathan Papik.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Counsel, Mr. Pivovar, are you with us today? We need to have you unmute.
Okay, I am now.
Very good. And Ms. Osborne, are you with us today?
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Good morning to both counsel. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pivovar. You may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Greg Pivovar, court appointed counsel for Mr. Lohman. It was the April morning. He was parked inside the stall of a car wash at 5 o'clock, approximately 5 o'clock in the morning. At that time, a Bellevue police officer drove through the parking lot. Noticed the car was there, did a U-turn, and observed the stall for approximately 5 minutes, according to his testimony. During that time, nobody washed the car or got out and washed the car. He was not in a position, according to his testimony, to observe whether anything was going on inside the stall. He could only observe the front of the car, and the car obviously did not move. After approximately 5 minutes, he made the decision to approach the car and make contact with the individual that was in the car. He got to the driver's side door, according to his testimony, and Mr. Lohman exited the vehicle. He indicates he had a brief look inside the vehicle prior to Mr. Lohman exiting. He asked Mr. Lohman if it was all right, if they talked a little while. At that point, he started questioning. There wasn't much questioning about what he was doing there, how long he was there. The questioning turned pretty quickly to the area of whether he was a drug user.
Mr. Pivovar, at what point do you contend that the interaction escalated beyond a tier one interaction?
I guess my contention would be that it did so at the time the officer asked to question him. I think at that point he had decided that he had a suspicion that there was illegal activity going on, and that he was going to at least temporarily detain the subject and question.
What did he do at that point that would make a reasonable person in the defendant's position feel that he was not free to leave?
Well, they were standing in front of the vehicle, which he would have needed to get into to leave. So I don't think at that point the defendant had any option to leave. He came there in that vehicle. He wasn't doing the officer's observations. He was not doing anything illegal, but he had no means with which to leave except to flee, I suppose, run. Questioning escalated to them questioning him about the officer questioning him about marijuana use, then cocaine, and methamphetamine use. The defendant admitted to marijuana use, denied any heavier drug use. The officer testified at the motion to suppress that there were four reasons he decided to detain the suspect. He said in his brief view inside the car, he saw some kind of pipe. Later on cross-examination, he said that pipe looked to be an aerial antenna that drug users to hollow out and smoke illegal substances through. He said he observed a torch lighter. He said the defendant admitted marijuana use. And fourth, he said the defendant had a hurried and nonsensical speech pattern. Missing from that, I think, is that he didn't observe any or didn't note that he observed there any signs of drugs, either smell emanating from the car or from the defendant, bloodshot, watery eyes, anything of that nature. But those were the reasons he had decided that he was going to detain the defendant. On cross-examination, he admitted the torch lighter is sold at a convenient mart and has all kinds of legal functions. He admitted that he didn't have much time to look at the mail in the car and wasn't sure that it was hollowed out or not. He admitted that he had no previous involvement with this defendant and therefore had no idea how he normally spoke and reacted. At that point, there is some questioning about a machete in the car. Again, not illegal to have a machete in the car. Subsequent search of the car revealed a machete with the handle sticking out. The defendant readily admitted he had a machete in the car. It wasn't something he was trying to hide. It wasn't an issue to him. As soon as backup arrives, he is placed in detention and the car is searched. It's the defendant's contention that all the items that were seized as a result of this search should have been suppressed. In this particular situation, there was no activity. The officer uses loitering. The loitering signs as an excuse. He only observed the car for 5 minutes. He didn't make any effort to, you know, maybe drive around the block a couple of times, come back and see if the car is still there, or anything of that nature. He was in a position where he couldn't even see what was going on in there, and it could have been something totally illegal. He said the car was cluttered and full of stuff.
In the officer's discussions with the appellant, did the appellant tell him that he'd been there for an hour or 2 hours?
At the time of the testimony at the motion to suppress, no. At the time of trial, that testimony did come from the officer, but not at the time of the testimony on the motion to suppress. So it wasn't really that should have been the focus of the officer's questioning of the defendant, not whether he was involved in drugs. There was no testimony that this was a high crime area, that crimes had been reported in the area, that they were, you know, that they were keeping a special watch on this Big John's car wash for any particular reason. This was just basically happenstance that they ran in to the defendant. The defendant did say that he was having some issues and that he was trying to find a peaceful place to think them out. And I guess, you know, it's early in the morning, but that's not a crime either. It's a 24-hour car wash. He's perfectly able to be there.
Mr. Pivovar, before your time expires, regarding your argument on sufficiency of the evidence, since the time of your briefing, we've decided State versus Stack a couple of months ago. What impact does that have on your argument? And is there still a surviving argument that was not considered in Stack?
I think Stack is currently dispositive of that argument. And this brief was written, obviously, before that. I guess it's my Chicken Little argument. If I keep saying it enough, maybe sometime the sky will fall and it'll hit the court on the head. Right now, I think it's kind of, it is dispositive. It happened to be my case, too.
Thank you.
We'd ask, the defendant would ask that you suppress the item seized that day.
Thank you very much. Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General representing the appellee of the state of Nebraska. Appellant was found guilty of possession of methamphetamine and two counts of carrying a concealed weapon. The state will submit the ineffective assistance of counsel arguments on the brief unless there are specific questions from the court. And I'll begin with the suppression issue. First, the state submits appellant waived objection to the evidence found during specifically the search of Lohman's person because he failed to renew the motion to suppress to that evidence at trial when exhibits 5, 7, and 8, which were the items that were found on appellant's person, were identified by the officer. And then again, when those exhibits were actually offered into evidence, appellant failed to renew his motion to suppress. When a motion to suppress is overruled, the defendant must make a specific objection at trial to the offer of evidence, which was the subject of the motion to suppress, in order to preserve the issue for appeal. And failure to do so waives that objection. Regarding the merits of the suppression issue, appellant argues that the officers exceeded the permissible scope and duration of a Terry stop in violation of the Fourth Amendment. The state disagrees. The initial contact with appellant was not a Terry stop. It was a consensual encounter that did not require a showing of reasonable suspicion. The three tiers of police citizen encounters are well established, and not all personal contact between a police officer and a citizen involves a seizure of that citizen's person. Only when the officer, by means of physical force or show of authority, has in some way restrained the liberty of that citizen may a court conclude that a seizure has occurred. So tier one, as we all know, it's a police citizen encounter that involves voluntary cooperation of the citizen elicited through non-coercive questioning and does not involve any restraint of liberty of the citizen. This was a tier one consensual encounter between one officer and the appellant who voluntarily agreed to speak with the officer. So, just briefly reviewing those facts, prior to the encounter, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. The officer was patrolling a 24-hour self-service car wash. He observed a single vehicle that was occupied by one person seated in the driver's seat, backed into one of the wash bays. The vehicle and the floor of the wash bay were dry, so clearly the vehicle had not been washed. And the car wash did have posted signs prohibiting loitering in the wash bays. when a car is not being washed. So the officer parked and observed the vehicle for about 5 minutes to see if the occupant would either wash the car or leave the car wash. When neither of those things occurred, the officer then decided to approach and make contact with the individual in the vehicle. So all these events took place in a public car wash. A single officer approached on foot without the use of overhead lights or sirens. The officer did not display any weapons. He did not summon Lohman to his presence. He did not instruct Lohman to get out of the vehicle. In fact, Lohman got out of the vehicle on his own. He did not assert any demands or directives to Lohman. He approached and used a conversational tone and simply just asked some questions about, initially asked Lohman if he would mind speaking with him for a few minutes, which Lohman said was fine. And they agreed to stand at the front of the vehicle to have this conversation. As that encounter continued, the officer just asked some questions about what Lohman was doing there, since he clearly was not washing his car. And as pointed out by Justice Freudenberg, he did say that he had been sitting in this car wash for 1 to 2 hours, obviously without washing his car. A seizure does not occur simply because a law enforcement officer approaches an individual and asks some questions, provided that the officer does not indicate that compliance with that request is required. No such indication ever occurred here. As long as the person to whom the questions are put remains free to disregard those questions and walk away, there has been no intrusion upon that person's liberty or privacy that would require some particularized and objective justification.
Counsel, your position, the state's position, is that the detention occurred when the officer informed Lohman that he was going to be detained and that the vehicle and his person were going to be searched?
Correct. Correct. That occurred several minutes into the conversation and after two additional officers arrived on the scene. And by the time that encounter did develop into a tier two investigatory stop, which, as I just said, it did occur when the officer informed Lohman that he was being detained, the officer had probable cause to search the vehicle pursuant to the automobile exception. And he also had probable cause to arrest him and search his person incident to arrest. Obviously, two exceptions to the warrant requirement include the automobile exception and search incident to arrest. The automobile exception applies when a vehicle is readily mobile and there's probable cause to believe contraband will be contraband or evidence of a crime will be found in the vehicle. Here, Lohman's vehicle was readily mobile. I don't think that there's any dispute there. Here, the officer approached the vehicle. As he did so, he was able to peer inside the vehicle by looking through the passenger window, and he observed in plain view what he believed, based upon his 23 years of training and experience, which included specialized narcotics experience, to be a 2 to 3 inch long metal pipe used to ingest controlled substances that would constitute drug contraband. The metal pipe was observed wedged in between the driver's seat and the center console of the vehicle. We know from Nebraska case law that, in fact, the fact that the pipe was later on determined not to be a drug pipe is not controlling as to whether there was probable cause to search the vehicle under the automobile exception. Probable cause does not demand a showing that the officer's belief is correct or more likely true than false. And he does not need conclusive proof that the metal pipe was, in fact, a drug pipe in order to establish probable cause. He only needed a fair probability that it was contraband. And officers are not required to rule out all innocent explanations for suspicious facts to establish probable cause. There were several other facts that supported the officer's belief that contraband would be found in the vehicle. And those include Lohman's admission to being a marijuana user. He was holding a torch style lighter that the officer testified was commonly used for smoking controlled substances. When the officer asked if Lohman used methamphetamine, he said, "No, man, I'm good," as if the officer had just offered him methamphetamine And his response to that was noticeably different than his response to questions about his use of other drugs. His speech was very rapid. He was fidgety. He was went into long and drawn out explanations to simple questions. And his responses were at times nonsensical. And in addition to all of that, Lohman admitted to having a machete in the vehicle. He described its location, that it was in located between the center console and the front seat. The machete, which was later on determined to be over 2 feet long, was not visible to the officer when he initially looked in the vehicle while he was standing next to it. The machete fits here, could fit under the definition here of a knife. It could also, it also is clearly a deadly weapon. This court has stated that a weapon is concealed when it's hidden from ordinary observation and is readily accessible on his person or in a motor vehicle operated by the defendant. So the machete being wedged between the front seat and the center console, which, by the way, is the exact same area that the officer happened to see the metal pipe. So he's obviously looking in that area and couldn't see a 2 foot long machete. That is an item that's hidden from ordinary observation. The officer believed that Lohman was in possession of a concealed weapon, and that was a factual finding made by the district court and supported by the record. It was not clearly erroneous. So all those facts known to the officer at the time justified the search of the entire vehicle without a warrant under the automobile exception. The same facts apply here to probable cause for arrest of Lohman and his search incident to arrest. That would, that under the totality of the circumstances, the objective facts, a reasonable officer could conclude there was probable cause to believe Lohman was carrying a concealed weapon and justifying his arrest. To the extent, just very briefly, that the record indicates the search of Lohman occurred prior to his arrest, that is permitted under the Fourth Amendment pursuant to Rawlings versus Kentucky. The two conditions there of contemporaneousness and probable cause for the arrest existing before the search both existed in this case. So there was a lawful search incident to arrest. Unless there are further questions from the court, I would ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Mr. Pivovar, thank you as appointed counsel for your service. And counsel, you are excused in the court. We'll go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Delhi.